Yeah. Is that even... Okay. So, what we'll do in this sphere is we'll trace the history of bankruptcies that happened between the 15th and the 1900s. You know, it says from the 16th to 19th century. And by reviewing how the Gedolim viewed bankruptcies throughout the generations, we'll be able to see what's the story with bankruptcies of Bizman Hazeh. So this year we'll do a history of bankruptcies throughout the generations. And Be'ez Hashem, by the next year, we'll view bankruptcies in our modern times. Okay, so just to summarize, if you remember the past two shiurim, we discussed two points. The first shiur, we discussed the concept of yish anachoyv, being mevat lachoyv, because the person gives up. That since he gives up, that he's never going to collect the money, so the choyv becomes batel. We had a big disagreement in many different poskim, and most poskim, many poskim said that usually there's no yish anachoyv. We had some exceptions in certain cases, but that's usually not the case. Then we had a big discussion about a concept called minik ha-soichim, right? That if the industry, the standard industry practice is a certain way, there's something called minik ha-soichim. Take a look at Simon Kufyud Gimel. This is page number 2. You see page number 2? It's a little bit difficult to read. This tshuva is written by the Mashach. The Mashach, the tshuva, this sefer was printed in the year 1590, and he was the Rav in the city of Salonika, is where he was Rav. He was Rav Moshe HaKoyen. That was the Mashach. And he writes as follows. Let's read this story that they had. Shaila, the question. Reuven and Shimon, Achim, Reuven and Shimon that are brothers, Shutzim, they were partners. Chayovim lebalei chayvim, they owed to creditors, to lenders. And so you had Reuven and Shimon, two brothers, they owed a lot of money to lenders. And what happened? Imeis echad lehem, suddenly one of them died. V'chayvi lerabbanon ilachol, they owe a lot of money to a lot of people. Ilachol Yisrael, shoven, imikolash, they left all the people, one of them died. So imikolash hishir, from all the money that they owed, nispara al manisa miksubasa. So now they said, you know what? Let's take a look and start paying off the debts. So firstly, the man that died, his wife had to get paid her ksuba. So that they paid off. They paid off his wife's ksuba. Ikamoikain, and similarly, nispara they paid. Aver hamelech. What is aver hamelech? Misim, they owed taxes. So they paid to the government taxes. Shayichayavim lamelech, that they owe to the king. Va'ifin, in a way, sha'ata nishiri echa v'imai b'li soymech v'toymech. Now his brother and his mother remained without any support, without any b'li mishan, mit'an, nothing to lie on. Loimatan lechem, they don't have what to eat. Loimatan mayim. Remember, you take a look at this bankruptcy, this is a real bankruptcy, there's nothing left to eat, you know. Today there's like an expression that halavai, I should go bankrupt like certain people go bankrupt. Because after they go bankrupt, they still have plenty of money left. These people went bankrupt, but after they went bankrupt, there was absolutely nothing there. Va'ata, and now what happens? So look what happens here again. Reuven and Shimon are brothers. Reuven dies, and he leaves over Shimon holding all of his loans. From Reuven's estate, the ksuba of his wife gets paid. They pay off some taxes. And now there's a whole bunch of people who come to his brother and they say, okay, now pay us. Now all the creditors come and they say, you know what? Obviously we can't collect any money from you because you don't have, right? This is what they say to the brother. You don't have the ability to pay. So they said, you know what? We'll give you an extension. You owe the money right now. We'll let you pay out the money over the next 5 years. This is what they said to the brother. So what's interesting is that if you look at this bankruptcy is not like the bankruptcy we're used to where the amount is reduced, but rather what happens in our case is an extension of time. That's how they went bankrupt. Kedei sheyuchal lefroy lehem, mehem yispar mimeni, velo yoyved mima mehem, me'oysam v'nechseyem. They shouldn't even lose a penny. But here's the problem. Many of the creditors agreed. But v'yesh, some of the creditors, ashe yisarev, some of them refused. Imoy imoy, they said, no, lespashe, we're not going to make this pshara to settle to give the extension of time. Kashin lespashe ala lechoyim achem, like the others agreed to, imoy with him. And therefore, and they, imechashev lesoyme bekur habarazon, you know what they want to do? They want to put him into jail. You don't pay? You go into jail. And by the way, historically, it was a crime. If you don't pay off your debts, that's what happened. Kadesha yifreni, v'ze ein loy almasha yismoich, v'noysen tanosoy, v'oymaloy shim hu yedeya, she yesh loy kamal lefroya, right? Hadinimoy, abu yudua l'chol ha'olam eichu adov emes. He says, if I had the money and I was hiding the money, I didn't want to pay, fine. So it made sense to put him into jail. He says, but he says he doesn't have the money. So what do you want? So she'ein lo yalmas she'yismoich, he doesn't have what to be soylechon, at she'yash, at yashkif, v'yorei Hashem yishamayim, losas lo yikoylas, ischayel, v'lefloy l'zmanim. Here, take one of those marim akoymas. Oh. So, he said as follows, we're starting to read a tshuva that's written in the Mashach, and we're up to page 2. And the discussion here is as follows. It was by the Mashach, there were two brothers. They owed money, and we're in the first paragraph. The two brothers owed money to a whole bunch of creditors, and one of them died. And then after one of them died, so they paid off from his estate to his wife, the ksuba, that they paid. They paid taxes, that they paid. And now they owed plenty of money. So everybody came and they jumped on the brother and they said, you have to pay us. So there was a whole bunch of creditors that said, you know what, let's give him an extension. Instead of him paying up all the money right now, let's give him that he can pay the money over the next 5 years. In other words, remember, they're going bankrupt, but not by reducing the amount, but by giving an extension. And this, and some of the creditors said, no, absolutely not, let's put him in jail. In those times, if you didn't pay your loan, he went to jail. That's what they tied it. And this went back and forth between the different groups. And they sent a question to the Mashach, and they said, Who tell us who is right? It's an interesting question. Can the roiv of the creditors, can most of the creditors force the minority of the creditors that they have to make a pshara? Think about this. The question is, can...
Because if they put them in jail, they have no chance to get paid.
Well, I'm not so sure about that, because probably the chesed was that if you put them in jail, so then it will become a case of pidyon shviim, and they'll run around and they collect money, and they're arguing, he says, what are you doing? We truthfully don't have. We're not hiding anything. We don't have. What's that? Okay, but he'll go to his friends, he'll get tzedakah, whatever the case, however he's going to figure out how to get out of it, that's number one. But there's a question, and right away you're going to jump in me and say, what's the question? What right, just because you want to make a pshara and you want to settle, what right do you have to get the other guy to settle? You have no such rights. That's going to be the obvious question. What are they thinking? Okay, you'll read the tshuva of the Mashach, and the Mashach is going to paskin that you could force the other guys to make a settlement. Let's take a look. And the truth is, it's very interesting, because in today's bankruptcies, usually what happens is there is a... Yeah, but what happens? How do you force a bankruptcy? Either the judge reviews the case and realizes you have to force a bankruptcy, or a majority of the creditors force the borrower into bankruptcy, and then the minority of the creditors need to honor the bankruptcy. So the truth is, this question is literally a picture of what's happening today in bankruptcy. Literally. So it's interesting. And this story happened in the 1500s. Okay? Now read a bit further. Another question. Right? which is Shisha Chadashim. Okay, that was an issue. There's a little tiny bit of money left, which was going to one of the children, who was the Soima, who was 6 months old, and the creditor wanted to sue this child to get that child's money. So that's the second part of the question. Okay. Tshuva. Take a look at the answer to the question. Mikama Ampik, for many reasons, Royani Limchois al Eli Habale Choivim, Hamamanami Misarvim, as he says, I'm going to be Moicha, and they have no right to refuse L'Espasha to make the deal to grant this extension. Kesha Soichim, Shahim Haroif. So the Mashach says that's the concept called Roiv, Sheboy Bipshora, Vihiskimu Ba Im Echad Haniska Ilahachav Leizman. And he says, just like these few, the Roiv of the creditors gave an extension, even the other creditors are obligated to give the extension. What is he based this on? Where does he get such a... How could you in Halacha force another creditor also to make an extension? It doesn't make any sense. Where does he get it from? Skip down to where there's a dot. You see that dot? Ichafi? Take a look at that. Ichafi ma sha'ani roye minika soichim ha'misrabim lovei b'pshara. He says, because... you see that dot in the middle of the first paragraph? Since I see that most of them are coming with a pshara, im ha'loiva with the lender, shalahem, their lender, she'koifen esmi she'enoi roitza le'hispasha. Therefore, you can force him to settle. The yesh lehem amashi yismachi. They do have what to be
said. Now, always, No.
This is something totally different. This is something totally different. I'll discuss if you could make it sure. No. No. I understand not. There's a concept called pshara hakreiv ledin. Pshara hakreiv ledin means that very often the bezin wants to rule according to the halacha, but the problem is that you can't rule perfectly according to halacha. Why? Because nobody today, in certain cases, knows the perfect halacha. So you do a pshara, which is kreiv ledin. This is something totally different. This is a settlement. This is an agreement amongst the parties. This is not that type of a pshara. No, but look what he says. He says, "V'yeshem amashi yismachim." You can force them to accept the pshara, the settlement. Kiven shel espashet haminikain ben hasoichim. Fascinating. Listen to what he says. Because we learned in Mehod. That's it. No, there's a minig of the Soichim that when a majority of the lenders make a pshara, the minority of the lenders are obligated to honor the pshara, and that's the minig of the
Soichim. So what do we need sources for that?
What's that?
If that's the minhag, that's the minhag.
Wait, then give us the source that minig of the Soichim is the halacha.
Minig of the Soichim is not source. Minig of the Soichim depends on the minhag that they do.
What's the source that you have to honor Minhag HaSoichim? Where do you have the source for that? What's the source? That was last week's shiur. He's going to bring the source. Exactly. He's going to prove that you're obligated to keep the Minhag HaSoichim even when that's not the din of the Torah. Read the next line. He says as follows. He says, where do you see that? He says. So he says as follows. Okay. Okay, here. How do you have that? Mehoda Mina, from that what we learned in Perik Ezeu Neshech. Hai Setumta. What is the Setumta? That's the case when, that's the source of Minhag HaSoichim. Because when they used to buy something, how did they buy something? There were all the kinyanim that are written in the Torah. But there's another way to buy something. What's the new way to buy something? You simply go and you make a roshim, which means you make a mark. You bought a box, right? So what you do is you take your marker and you make a mark on the box, you write your initials on it. And that was considered a kinyan, even though in the Torah that is not considered a kinyan. So you see there's a concept called Minhag HaSoichim. Finish. Alright, so he says, Mehoda Minan Bepeg Ezu Neshech, Haithadum Tekanya. In Cain, therefore, Benidin Didon in our halacha, Nami Roy Lokif Lubali Choivim Hamasarvan Sheyeskimulis Pasha Alpi Pshorah Shasoichim Sheheim Haroi. All right, and he says, especially in this case where there's no foul play and he doesn't have the money, so the Mashach in the 1500s already made a psak that on a, but remember, it's a bit different than our bankruptcy. It's not a bankruptcy for to be mevatel the chayiv, to lower the amount, but rather was a bankruptcy to make a pshara to give an extension. To give an extension.
Yeah, I'm saying the point of this Mahashah is that
right.
You can force somebody to settle even though it's against, there's no source in the Torah.
Even though there's no source, against, we don't want to use those words, because when it's against, we're going to get into it, there, it's a little more complicated. It's not against. When there's no source, when this is the halacha, it's a minute, right? Okay, now again, what do you mean? But the comparison to modern day situation is a striking comparison. When we learned last week that Reb Moshe Feinstein and the Chassam Sofer told us that what is the reason why you need to honor the Minhag HaSeichem? Right? Why is Minhag HaSeichem? Why is it honored? It doesn't say in the Torah of Halacha. Why is it honored? So Reb Moshe told us, and Chassam Sofer told us that the reason is because every time you and I do business, and we're doing business based on a certain understanding, so that becomes like a condition to our deal, like a tanai. So if it becomes like a tanai, a condition to our deal, so that becomes the accepted halacha. Alright, now, just to have one mashach that says this, you know, wouldn't be enough. I want to show you that it's not just the mashach, but there are many others over throughout the generations that agreed with this tshuva, which is written in the Mashach. Let me show you. Go ahead.
The right to put him in jail just because he doesn't have the right to
say? It's a very interesting question. And you take a look. By the Shir I said on Sunday, there was a judge there who asked me that question. And today, this judge came to me. Says he found the kinshus of the Vad Dalet HaRatzos. You know, throughout the years, there was always that Vad Dalet HaRatzos. And he found from the 1600s their writings about who they can put into jail. And he says, yes, when they didn't pay the chovus, they usually put people in jail. That's what he wrote. And the idea was that if there was such a threat, the person would usually pay or be able to raise the money. But it was considered a crime that they would put in jail. I mean, the Rambam brings down that if you have a person that's chayv malchus, and you're afraid he's going to run away, or chayv misa, they used to put him in jail. So I was also wondering, you know, where this halacha.
I'm assuming it was a goyish jail, wasn't a Jewish jail. This is Saloniki. This is not.
Yeah, Saloniki was not. It was not a Jewish jail.
There was not a Jewish jail.
But it could be they cooperated. It could be that the Rabbonim.
They could have had because they had a lot of Jews there. And
yeah. But he found it in the Vad HaRatzos from the 1600s that that's what they did. If a guy went and didn't pay his bills, they put him in jail. And as a matter of fact, he was very upset because he came to my house this afternoon, this judge, and he forgot to bring this. Maybe next week, if I remember, if he brings it to me, I'll bring you guys a copy of it. It's just a fascinating thought that this is what they actually did. So that was the situation of how they actually dealt with it. Okay, now. Well, again, it could very well be that they were working together and they were simply enforcing what the Rabbanim wanted. Yeah, so I'm not sure if it was a Jewish jail or not. I can't tell you 100%. He doesn't explain, and I don't know the history of Saloniki well enough to be able to answer that question. But either they were cooperating with each other or you know, in certain cases, they felt it was okay. So I can't tell you 100% the answer to that question. Now, I just want you to take a look for a second at page 5 and 6. At page 5 and 6. Page 5 and 6 is a tshuva from the Mashdam. The Mashdam was also one of the great, great Gedolim, who wrote beautiful tshuvas for him. As a matter of fact, if you take a look at the Chidah, in the Sefer Shem HaGdolim, the Chidah writes in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Alfandri, he writes as follows. He says that the Mari Ibn Leif, the Mashach, and the Mashdam, this is what the Chidah writes, in the name of Rabbi Yaakov Alfandri, are to us like the Rosh, the Rif, and the Rambam. That's what he writes. So, which is amazing, and I'm going to show you now an agreement on this subject from the Mashach, and the Mashdam. I couldn't find what Mari Ibn Leif has to say on this subject, but I'm talking about the Gedolei you know, who are achronim, who are weighing in with opinions, and they'll agree to this concept. I'm not going to read this whole tshuva to you, but just if you want to know what happened over here, there was a similar type of situation where a person owed a lot of money to a whole bunch of people. You read the Shailin Kufchet, that's pretty much what happened. A man owes money to many different people, and according to the Torah, when you owe money to a whole bunch of different people, how do you get out, how do you pay? The answer is, and there's a whole bunch of people come at the same time, and they say, you owe me, you owe me, you owe me. So usually there are two things to look at. There is the kedima, there is the timing of this shibudim, or the fima oisav, which means then he owes $100,000, then he owes $1 million, and then you go pro rata based on the numbers, percentage. Those are the two ways to pay. But there was a situation there where there was Schoira, it was on a boat, and they made a deal that they would split it equally and they would grant an extension. And then one of the people who was in charge of distributing the Schoira went and he quickly grabbed everything, and he was one of the people who was owed, and he decided he's going to grab for himself first. That was what he did. And since he was sitting there, you know, holding all the Schoira, he was able to take off for himself a greater shear. And there was sort of an understanding that he made an agreement, but on the other hand, he only was there at the meeting to agree, but he never actually signed, so he never really was a part of the agreement. So he says, I can go and I can take whatever I want. So it's basically a similar story to the story of the Mashach. And most of the tshuva of the Mashtam concentrates on a different subject. His issue is, maybe when he took it on behalf of everybody, so there was schia. So since there was schia from Zachman Abim Shmuel Gisfanov, he already made a kinyan, so he didn't really, for the others, so he didn't really own it anymore, so it already belonged to everybody else. That's what most of his kinyan, most of this tshuva, this lengthy tshuva is based on, this Simen Kufchet. In the middle of the tshuva, if you take a look, where it says Kufchet, this is really the Shoyal speaking, it's the question, and, you know, it's approximately three quarters of the way down on the page. You see where it says, the Dal Mehocha Mitam Schia, he says, forget for a moment about the reason of Schia. Are Mitam Minik Shenahag Yasochem, he says, there's a Minik that the Sochem had, Kishe'en Leil Yodesh O Bachoy Vofroy Misholim, when a person doesn't have the ability to pay the Chol HaBalichoyvis, and we learned in the Yishalmi, the Minik Mevatel Halacha. And then he goes into the same discussion we had last week, that it's all Menhagim, it's not just a Minik Vesikin, it's any Minik, a Minik is Mevatel the Halacha. And at the end, if you go to the next page, the end of the Mashach says as follows, literally the last line of the last of the next page, he says, Im Yirtze Le'ezer Hadin Mitam HaMinik K'mo Shekosav HaShoyl Yofa Yofa. So the Mashach, after a lengthy tshuva on the topic of Schia, says, by the way, this whole subject of Schia is not really necessary, because the questioner who said the question based on Minik HaSoichem was correct. So even if he didn't agree at the end to the settlement, he needs to agree with the majority of the creditors or the majority of the lenders. So therefore, I'm just showing you that the Mashach and the Mashtam both clearly agree that when you have a Minik HaSoichem in business, you are obligated to honor the Minik HaSoichem. Okay, now everybody sees that. Now, the reason why I'm stressing this point so strongly is, take a look on page number 7, and I'll show you why I'm stressing this point so strongly. Because, truthfully speaking, when you have a pshara, this is going to be the obvious question, and this is what a person's going to do. What's a person going to do? He's going to get pulled into court for a bankruptcy proceeding. And the courts are going to give him 30 cents on the dollar. Right? 30 cents on the dollar. So what does he do if he's a bal seichel? He takes the 30 cents on the dollar. So he was owed $1 million. He took $300,000. What's the next thing he does? Goes to Bezin. Right? Isn't that the natural thing to do? And next week, Be'ez Hashem, I'll show you all the tshuvas of people that did so, and how all of the Gedolim, I have 5-6 of the Gedolei Achronim in the last 50 years here in America, in Israel, in Europe, how they dealt with this question when people actually did that. But I want to show you, firstly, why it's the, usually you should just take your money and you should have the ability to collect. Why is that? When you settle for 30 cents on the dollar, or whatever the amount is, what did you do? You made a pshara, right? Isn't that what you did?
Of course I did.
So that's a next week's shiur. Wait. You're going into a new discussion. You're going into the discussion that it's a pshara ba'oinus. Okay, so that I'll discuss next week if you consider it a pshara ba'oinus or not. But I'm not, you're already three steps ahead of us. Let's first speak about the simple pshara. Did you make a kinyan? Or did you just go into court and get your money? When you go to court to get your money, did you make a kinyan?
No.
You never made a kinyan that you relinquished. So what kind of pshara is that? Take a look, page 7. I want to read for you the Machaba, what the Bishyaisa says.
It's better to say something,
it's false. The he's arguing, and next week we're going to discuss if that concept is accurate or not. You can say I was forced and I want more money. That's what you can say.
Yeah, but once you bring the
Hadith
to Harim
into the Ah, so Ezra says, what is Minigas Harim? That's the industry practice. So how does that work? So one second. I want to read to you first. Then I'm going to read to you Rebbe Kivege says exactly what Ezra just said. What?
He has no rights.
So then he might have no rights to go to Bezdin afterwards. So wait. So take it. I want to read something to you. Read page number 7. Go to page number 7. I want to read to you the Machaba. And I want to read to you Rebbe Kivege what Rebbe Kivege has to say on the subject. The Mechab on page number 7 says as follows: Pshara beloy kinyan. If you have a pshara, right, without a kinyan, it's meaningless. Ain't a klum, it's nothing.
So how do you know kinyan? What do you mean?
I have all the time in bed and two people make an agreement, and the first thing I do is I quickly reach into my hand into my pocket and I grab something and I say, okay, lift it. Okay, lift it. Baruch Hashem, then I get up, I know I can leave because I can't back out anymore.
Really?
Like a Kenyan, that's it.
That's what's up. I understand very well, but I saw.
Yeah? You have to make a Kenyan, it's the only way to do it.
Somebody made a Pshara, but at least
he didn't make a Kenyan. Well, you want to know when you can back out of a Pshara where you can? In Simon Yud Beis, it depends if the Bezin forces the Pshara, if one of the parties offer the Pshara, sometimes it's not a Pshara, it's a Bechila.
With
a Bezin offer the Pshara? Sometimes the Pshara goes as a part of the Pesach Bezin. There's many cases when you do need a Kinyan, you don't. So I'm saying, there are times you need it, there are times you don't, and Bezos Hashem next week about a shiur. That's exactly what I'll discuss. When you do need a pshara, when you don't. Huh?
There's times you don't need it.
There's times you don't, there's times you do. I'll discuss.
Pshara means two people are trying to make
you make an agreement.
So we need a baby sometimes, like you suggested. You know what? I say, you know, you've got to give this.
No, so that case is different, because that case, the pshara becomes the psak din sometimes.
Oh.
So that's something else. Here I'm saying this is an agreement. It's not a psak din. Nobody.
We can decide, you know, I owe you $1,000. You know what? I'm just going to pay you $300.
Yeah. The two of you make an agreement. Now do you have to honor the agreement or not?
No.
So I'll go through next week when by Bez you need a pshara. I'll show you all Bez Hashem that whole area of halacha. But look what the Mechaba just said. What is the Mechaba rule? Mechaba paskins that if you make a pshara. What's the story of you make a pshara? You don't have to keep it if there's no kinyan. Right? So the Kivege comes on the spot and points out that you're right. A pshara without a kinyan is nothing, but Zokar Bekivege in a bankruptcy, when there's Minik HaSoichrim, since the Minik HaSoichrim is that that's the halacha, even if there's no kinyan, you honor it. Read Rebbe Kivege, page 7. That's Rebbe Kivege on this Mechaba. Beloy Kinyan. The truth is Masas Moshe. And the Masas Moshe, you can read the truth, but it's very difficult to read. It's a very old print. Page 8, 9, and 10. The Masas Moshe had a story where somebody wanted to argue after he made a settlement that he's backing out. And the Masas Moshe goes through all kinds of cases when a Pshara needs a Kinyan, when a Pshara doesn't need a Kinyan. And then it says as follows: Hetik B'Shem Chuvas Mashach. He quotes this Mashach. In the Chedek Beit Kufi Gimel, Bibal Choyf, Sheskimi Lefashim Aloiva. Right? Ve'echad Eina Maskim Imo, Mikama Amparoni, Lokif Esamamayin, Lispashik Shasar Haki Minig Asarichim, Lokif Shasarichim, Lokif Shasarichim, Ve'yesh Lahem, Almati Yisnachim, Ahid Asatumta. What's Rabbi Kivege trying to say? There was no Kinyan, right? That's Rabbi Kivege's quote. There was no Kinyan. And the answer is, if the Asmachta is Kaina, so you don't need a Kinyan. Now, the Satumta. Satumta is Koina. So you know the Kenyan, because the Kenyan is Rabbanon. It's automatic. Right? The Minikat Sarchim creates the Kenyan. It's automatic. That's the comment Rabbi Kiva Eger makes on this Mechaba, that Shura does not need a Kenyan. Now, I'm just going to stop for a moment, and all you're going to say to me, okay, so Minikat Sarchim works, so then if that's the case, every single bankruptcy should absolutely work. Right? Now, is that accurate or is that not accurate? Now, that's a very heavily debated point in the modern day Poskim. Let me tell you what the issues would be if that is correct or not. Number one, when we say that there's a Minik HaSoichem, and the Minik HaSoichem says that a person is allowed to go bankrupt, is that completely true? Let's discuss this. There's two ways of a person going bankrupt. There's a person going bankrupt personally, and the person going bankrupt on a business level, on a corporate level. Now, if you came over to me here in the Beis Medrash and you borrowed from me $10,000, and then you go bankrupt personally, right? So then I said, you give me my $10,000. So what do you say? No, but you gave me the loan with the Minik HaSoichem. I don't think that would be the case. Why would that not be the case? It's between us. Two people in the Beis Medrash sat down, we did something on our own. I don't think you can say in such a case that we did it based on the Minik HaSoichem. Okay, now, let me paint two other pictures for you.
You don't have to verbalize it.
No, you don't have to verbalize it, but the Tanai is in what we probably accepted as the agreement. I would say as follows. I would say if it was in business, I would also say it depends really on what type of arrangement. If you have an arrangement that's amongst two Jews in business, and they good friends, they're doing business in a very, like, let's call it, you know, yeshivish style, if you know what I'm saying, right? And they hire some attorney here in Barfak and Flatbush, and they put together this deal. I don't know, are you going to say that they clearly meant every one of the Minik HaSoichem of bankruptcy? I don't know, I'm not 100% sure. I will say that if we sit down on the deal with some very, you know, high-profile attorneys,
In
that case, I would imagine you clearly do have to honor Minik HaSoichem. I'm just trying to point out one thing, that when we say Minik HaSoichem works, that works because of Tanai. It works because of Tanai. The Tanai is what the people probably said, what their svara actually was. So that's number one. Number two, I want to point out another point. This is an extremely, extremely important point when we understand bankruptcy. There's two ways of going bankrupt. There's one way of going bankrupt, like the Mashach described going bankrupt. The guy works out, he doesn't have any bread to eat. So there, I'd imagine the Minik HaSoichem is to be mefasher, like sure. There's another way of going bankrupt. The other way of going bankrupt is that as the person's going bankrupt, he puts it from one pocket into his other pocket, right? And he figures out some loophole how to restructure, and this time he makes more money than the first time. You know, there was that famous bankruptcy where somebody went and he went bankrupt, and then he went bankrupt, but his wife still had money. So when the banks auctioned off all the properties, which were his, and he knew how cheap they were being sold for, so he had his wife buy back all the properties. So in reality, what happened? They went from one pocket to the other pocket. So are you going to tell me that that's the concept that Chazal meant, that there's a Minik HaSoichem to go bankrupt? I don't know if you can say such a concept. In other words, what I'm trying to point out is... if there's a Minik HaSoichem, let's say I find you a Minik HaSoichem to rip other people off in business. So you're going to tell me that's a Minik HaSoichem? Of course not. If the rules become abused and people figure out if they're gray... But even according to the Soichem, it's like sort of a shady thing to do, then I don't believe we can say they're upheld by Minik HaSoichem. So I'm just trying to give you a few points as why, even though there are such strong shuvas written about the chaim of Minik HaSoichem, are you going to 1,000,000% can be able to apply bankruptcy to Minik HaSoichem? Lav dafke. You know, you gotta be careful.
If you can't say that Hadrat Saharim was bankruptcy, what we came up with, you have nothing.
What's that?
If you cannot,
Well, Yish was not that strong, I agree. If you don't make, but next year we're still going to discuss one more topic, which is the topic of Kinyonim. Sometimes Kinyonim are made. All right. Sometimes you sign in court. We'll discuss that. There are still a few more issues that need to be discussed, and there's one issue we didn't touch on at all yet, and that's Dina Machisadina, if that plays a role in bankruptcy or not, which that will leave Mez Hashem for next week's share. Right.
That's the problem. It gets abused. The is very good, but we see that the bankruptcy does get abused.
Clearly. And if it gets abused, then you have to put a little bit more Ian into it.
Where do you draw the
line? Exactly. So the truth is, look, I'm raising the issues, and you probably have to view each case on an individual basis. You know, I can't cover all the issues. I'll just add that by a corporation, just 1 second.
They went bankrupt, and they're right back, and they're bigger than... Not a lot of people got really mad for those people.
Yeah. So
what's
here?
They're right back in business. They went out of business.
And now they're right back. What can you do? It's 100%. And I'll just point out, by corporation, there could be one more angle, because by corporation, you can say that there's, besides the bankruptcy, there's a tenai that you should only get paid from the corporation. And the corporation only doesn't have money anymore. That happens to be a pretty decent argument. Now, I just want to point out another few things. There's an absolutely fascinating Shuvas Mashach. I discussed already one Shuvas Mashach, but there's a Shuvah in the Mashach in Chelik Gimel, Simon Ches, which will be in your pages, page 3 and 4. And I'll read to you the tshuva outside. But the story that happened is an unbelievable story. Like, if you said that people are fanegulous today, listen to the way people did things in those days, and you'll see literally the concept of shift chubetach mimo, where you have a whole group of people that everybody's figuring out how to rip off the next person. This is the story that happened was, there was a fellow by the name of Reuven, and Reuven owed money to a whole bunch of lenders. Reuven owed all their money, and what happened was, Reuven realized he could not afford to pay everybody. So he approached Shimon, and Shimon was a very influential person. Shimon was a powerful person, he was a wealthy man, and they took his opinion seriously. So he said to Shimon, "Shimon, I need to make a deal with you. I need all the creditors to give me an extension. So, let's make a deal. You're going to sign a piece of paper that the piece of paper says that Shimon is granting to Reuven an extension. Alright? Now, I'll take this piece of paper and I'm going to go to all the other creditors. And I'm going to say, listen, if Shimon, who is a business mind, and Shimon was a wealthy man, what's that? Yeah, Shimon is one of the creditors. He approaches one of the creditors and he says, "I want to make a deal with you." Reuven, who's the borrower, approaches one of the lenders and he says, "Let's make a deal. The deal that we're going to make is that you're going to give me personally you're going to write that you're granting to me an extension. All right? I'm going to take that paper and I'm going to run to all the other lenders. And I'm going to say, take a look, Shimon gave me an extension, so you give me an extension too." He says, "Then I'm going to convince everybody else. And once I convince everybody else, so then I'll have money, because I won't have to pay everybody else right away, so I'll pay you off right away. You hear the plan?" So he approached Shimon, he said, "Shimon, listen, you write a shtar to me that you're granting to me an extension, and because you're going to grant to me an extension, so now everybody else..." What's that? They're going to join. This is a gewaltig cup. Okay? This is I get a fakrumte cup. What? Yes, I know. He's giving him a star that he's going to give him, that there's going to be an extension. But the truth is, there will not be any extension. All right. But that was an agreement between the two of them. Now, but the only thing is, he made him write. It's a knunyah, but he made him write that he'll give him an extension if the two judges who are Levi and Yehuda will approve of the extension. Before the other ones all did a deal without that addition of Levi and Yehuda, and everything went through. He got everybody to grant him an extension. He's very happy. Now Shimon comes and Shimon says, "Pay." So he says, "What are you talking about? I'm not paying. I have a star from you." I got a star. You get involved, they come right back at you from the other angle. I got a star. What do you thought? No extension for you. You're getting an extension like everybody else. So he says to him, he says, what are you talking about? The shtar. He says, firstly, no comment on what our arrangement was. I got a shtar. And secondly, he says, what are you talking about? He says, minigas eichem. I have 80% of the guys agreed to give me an extension. Now you're a minority. So even though, right, even so now you're forced. You don't have a choice. Right? This is a cuff. Then another story happens here, that there were two judges, that the two judges we said were Levi and Yehuda, and he had an ishtar that Levi and Yehuda have to approve, and before Levi and Yehuda could approve, Levi died. So it became now a new sichsuch. What does it mean as Levi and Yehuda approve? Does it mean Levi and Yehuda or Levi or Yehuda? If it's Levi and Yehuda, they both can't approve because one of them is dead. Either or it's and. That became the next. Beautiful tshuva in the Mashach, where he discusses the famous sugya in Abba Mises Bezdin, Ishki Yitalas of this Imoy. If it's both, if it's one, the Torah has. Anyways, at the end of the Mashach says that it's both. That because it says, Kefi Ashe Yigzeru, Levi the Yehuda, so the Yigzeru is plural, so they expected both of them to sign, and it seemed to the Mashach that it was such an unspoken deal. So the Mashach's ruling is, listen to the ruling of the Mashach, that Reuven gets the extension from all the other creditors, but he has to pay Shimon on the spot. That's the ruling of the Mashach. No? So what's the kasha on the Mashach? There's one strong question on the Mashach. He has to pay Shimon right away. That's quite logical. Do you have to pay Shimon right away? But everybody should ask me a different question. Why does Reuven get the extension by all the other creditors? How did he get the extension? Through Shimon. But he fooled him. It's a pshar b'tas. The classic mistake. He fooled him. Think about what happens here. Reuven approached Shimon. He says, listen, I need your help. You should help me fool everybody. He fools everybody. And after he fools everybody, he says, okay, now I want you to go and you should get for me the... Now I want everybody else to honor the extension. So why should anybody honor the extension? They only honor the extension because they thought that Shimon was into the deal. Shimon was never into the deal. Why should they honor the extension? So that's, if you think about it, it's not so pleasant. And this is my shach and this shuva. You take a look at it, does not address that point. So in order to answer that question, let me show you, take a look at page number 13 and 14. Page 13. The Mechaber tells us on page 13 that a dayan chato, a dayan makes a mistake. Alright, that's Chajmishu Simon Chosei Siv Dalet. Yeah, a dayan makes a mistake. V'chayev shvua, he's Mechayev a shvua, Lamisha Ainai Chayev Ba, to a person that's not really Chayev a shvua. V'os a pshara, which means you're sitting in front of me in a din Torah. I say to you, you have to make a shvua to the other party. So you say, you know what, I'm not making a shvua, nobody swears today, I'll settle. So you only made a pshara because you thought you were Chayev a shvua. Then you found out that the dayan made a mistake and you weren't chayv in the shvua. What's the halacha? The pshara is not a pshara. Even though he made a kinyan, why? She'ein b'shvua, after she'kan b'yadam, a pshara ain't a klim, the kinyan b'toyesu b'choyzer. Everything is reversed because it was a mistake. Okay, so I'm showing you a mechaber, where the mechaber rules clearly that if you make a pshara by mistake, a pshara b'toyes, even with a kinyan, is not considered a pshara. Okay. So I believe that the answer to the question is in a tshuva in the Mishkan of Yaakov, and it's also in the tshuva in the Ramah. And basically what happened in the Mishkan of Yaakov is a story where a person was sitting in front of a dayan, and the dayan said, you know, I want to tell you something. I suggest you should settle because in your case there's the following weaknesses and you might lose because of those points. That's what the dayan said. Then he settled. He went home. And he reviewed the case, and he spoke to some big experts, and he realized that Dayan, what he said to him was not true. He couldn't have lost the case. He came back, and he said, Pshar B'toyes. So the Mishkan is Yaakov rules that there's no Pshar B'toyes. That's this Mishkan is Yaakov in Simon Yud. There's no Pshar B'toyes whatsoever. Why? He says, Pshar B'toyes is only when it was a clear mistake, beyond the shadow of doubt. The Dayan here didn't tell you that you're going to lose. The Dayan says it's a good chance you're going to lose. That's not a pshara b'toyes. The Mishkan of Yaakov adds on, every pshara, by definition, is partially a mistake. And that's why you need to make a kinyan by a pshara. Why is every kinyan partially a mistake? Because a pshara is not the correct answer. A pshara means, okay, I'll give a little, you give a little, and that's why you make a kinyan to make sure that the pshara is a true pshara. But a kinyan, by definition, is partially off. So as long as they didn't totally mislead you, it's not a pshara. But then the Mishkan of Yaakov adds another point from the Ramah. And I think the Ramah is very negated to our discussion in the Mashach. He says, how about if there was a mistake by a pshara? But even though there was a mistake, there are other factors. There are 10 other reasons, or one or two other strong reasons why you'll have to make the settlement anyways. Then you don't say pshara b'tayis. Because you have to do the settlement anyways. You have no choice. So what I'm telling you is that if you think about it, in this case, what choice did the other ones really have? The person had no money to pay. They had no choice. They really had to grant an extension. So they had no choice. Okay, they did the logical thing and they granted the extension because they thought somebody else also did. But that was really what they really should have done in this situation. Again, but it was based on a toys. But on the other hand, that toys is a toys that if not for that toys, let's say Shimon was out of the picture, and Reuven came to the other creditors and he says, grant me an extension. What would probably have happened? They probably would have granted the extension anyways. You don't say pshar b'tayis in such a case, and the pshar is honest. And that's the reason, l'chayr, why the mashach went, and the mashach enforced that the others should pay. Good.